through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Tom, Jake, and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Ross.
This hour of Tom, Jake, and Stacy is brought to you by Mercedes-Benz of Seattle. It's time to have some fun here, you guys. I know that we've got some defensive stuff, some defensive questions and red flags we're going to get back to in the halftime show at 1:30. But first, we're going to have some fun with the plays of the game. All right, let's get started with the first quarter. Now, scoring opens up with a 43-yard Greg Zuerlein field goal. Dallas takes an early lead, up 3-0. But then you have this touchdown by Tyler Lockett.
Play fake by Rust. Stops. Looks, throws deep, man wide open, it's Lockett, he's in, touchdown, Seahawks! The team that has given up a bunch of big plays just gives up another one to Russell Wilson from 43 yards out. Cowboys were still thinking about Chris Carson's run, and Russell Wilson loads up and drives it 43 yards to a wide open Tyler Lockett, the Seahawks on the board, 6-3.
It's a four-play, 75-yard drive that pits Seattle up 7-3.
Now, that play, you talk about the week before, DK Metcalf having an unbelievable performance on Sunday Night Football against Stephon Gilmore. Well, what did that lead to? It led to the entire Dallas Cowboys secondary being so hyper-focused on DK Metcalf, trying to run a deep cross and then whip him back out over the middle, that it grabbed the attention of the corner and both safeties. And Tyler Lockett just ran right by him. Got right behind him and nowhere near him. Easy pitch and catch for a Tyler Lockett touchdown. That's the type of stuff that you love to see, that complementary duo between DK and Tyler working for each other to help each other get open.
By the way, for all of you who hate Troy Aikman, Jake.
Yeah.
Stop hating Troy Aikman.
Well,
this broadcast brought it all back to me.
Well, I think he, and correct me if I'm wrong, I think he was the one that said about Tyler Lockett yesterday that he gets better separation on his route running than any receiver in the NFL. And it was apparent all day yesterday.
Yeah.
Agree,
disagree? It was spectacular. No, I definitely agree. Tyler has been spectacular. And in those particular areas, in terms of separation, route running, Tyler, he doesn't take a backseat to anybody.
Now,
one more quick thing before.
Yeah.
Just before we go on here, because we got a lot to get to. I may ask this tomorrow in three questions.
Okay.
Who is your favorite combination on this team? Is it Russ to Lockett or is it Russ to Metcalf? Think, marinate, let it bake. Talk about it tomorrow.
Okay. Oh, I'm going to have a good answer. I can't wait for that. The next play, defense makes a statement early by tackling Ezekiel Elliott in the end zone for a safety.
Here comes the handoff to Elliott. He gets hit in the backfield. Does he go down in the backfield? It's a safety. The Seahawks make the tackle on Zeke Elliott in the end zone for the safety. Well, you know it's going to be looked
at. On the field is confirmed. Safety.
Now that's Dallas's first play from scrimmage, and it's Brian Monet in to make the play for Seattle.
Huge play.
Feed me. Yeah. I wish the crowd was there in the Hawks nest so Elliott could get up and look at all the fans pointing at him with their spoon going, feed me. That's one of my least favorite gestures, celebrations in any sport.
Oh, man. Just the get off by both of those defensive linemen, LJ Collier, Brian Monet, getting great pushback, which really put Ezekiel Elliott in a really difficult position, because no running back wants to try and be patient when they're in their own end zone. They want to see a hole, hit the hole, and it really caused Zeke to pause for a second and then end up slipping while he was making the cut. So great job by LJ Collier and Brian Monet there.
I think, too, though, watching that made me realize how many big plays were just lacking from the defense this year. It was fantastic to see. They've been making big plays when it counts. Interceptions by Dunbar, by Shaquille Griffin. Obviously, a goal line stop with the help of Bobby Wagner, Lane O'Hill, and LJ Collier. But seeing them make this safety early, it was notable, right? You felt it. You felt like, oh, okay. Like an early difference-making play in a game. I'd like to see more of that. All right, you guys aren't going to love this, but it's important we talk about it. Second and 11, Russell Wilson finds DK Metcalf open for what he thinks is going to be a 62-yard touchdown. DK Metcalf thinks it is, too, because he's not hanging on to that ball.
Russell Wilson is now up over 143 on his quarterback rating. Drops back seven steps. Looks, he's going to let it fly again. DK Metcalf out there. He's open. He's got the catch. He is in. Did he get to the end zone? I don't know if he broke the plane of the end zone. The ball was slapped out of his hands, and it went out the back of the end zone. Let's see. Did he break the plane? If he did not, it is going to be a touchback.
That's a play that just drives you up a wall because it's just carelessness. It's just one of those moments where it's like, DK, you can celebrate when you get in the end zone. And I have been in those meetings, sat in those chairs where they consistently talk about that, where they will show highlight reel after highlight reel of boneheaded mistakes of other players from other teams across the league that are celebrating or not taking care of the football. And then, you know, they have something bad happen to them. So that's something that this team preaches, and to see DK have that happen, I know drives Pete Carroll up a wall. I know it drives his coaching staff up a wall, but the one thing that you can count on is that DK Metcalf will never make this mistake again. This is not, that's not the type of person or personality that he has. I think he just got caught up in the moment, and he'll be celebrating in the end zone from here on out.
You know what I think it might be? I think DK Metcalf is so good at what he does that occasionally his mind just wanders and he gets a little bored, like with what he does.
You know, like he's so good. So he's like, what am I going to watch later today?
Oh, I didn't. Yeah, it's like I just turned around to slow up here and I didn't even notice there was a defender behind me. Like, I'm that good where I can just think about other things while I'm sprinting and this ball's coming at me from God knows where. He's just that good. I don't blame him.
Yeah, I don't know about that. I think that he had a good game. DK's feeling himself. DK's feeling confident. And it's that confidence you want from a receiver. He just got the best of the best cornerback in the game the week prior. I think it's just a moment, right? It's a rookie mistake where you have a moment where you're feeling on top of the world and you don't have fans there. You're like, I'm going to walk in. I'm yards away from the end zone. And props to the Dallas Cowboys for hustling.
Yeah,
hustling
great
in that
play.
Situation. It was a fantastic play. Guarantee you DK doesn't make this mistake again.
Trevon Diggs.
Yeah,
he did. It was fantastic.
Yeah.
All right. Then you have Dak Prescott who finds Wilson for a 40-yard touchdown. Not great. But the extra point is blocked. We've been saying this about Trey Flowers all day. Oh, you want to see more from Flowers. You want to see more from Griffin. Props to Flowers for this play.
Half the field in shade, half the field in sunshine here at Century Field. And it's blocked. The ball slapped down. It might have been Trey Flowers who got there. The long, lean one with the great speed off the corner. You almost never can block a PAT. And Flowers did just that.
Length. He's got it.
He does.
He's got length. He does. I mean, how many guys, I'm not sure who the tallest guy on the field is who can move that quickly. But, you know, if you're frustrated by Trey Flowers, at least, you know, let's acknowledge. Like, he had a rough day. He's had probably, it's fair to say he's had a rough season. Came up with a big play yesterday. We just wanted to give him a little props there. That's all. I did anyway.
No,
I felt bad
liked
for
it.
The poor guy.
Yeah, I did. No, it wasn't his best, and I wonder, I mean, do you think that it affects anyone's confidence to have Dunbar out there, essentially? I know that the official depth chart for the team says Trey Flowers or Quentin Dunbar, but it feels like Quentin Dunbar is your starter with Flowers as your backup there, or a guy that's going to go in and kind of switch out with him. I mean, does that affect your confidence? It seems like a simple question, but I wonder if that was at all a factor there.
It can. But I don't think that was the reason why you're seeing Trey Flowers play this way. You saw him play this way in the second half of the season this last year. And unfortunately, it came through again against the Dallas Cowboys, who have some very good receivers. Okay, it's not like he's going to get up against chumps. Michael Gallup's a really good receiver. Amari Cooper's a really good receiver. But you can't just give up big plays the way that he did yesterday. But, yes, it had a big moment there. Great PAT block by Trey Flowers.
All right. Then you have fellow corner Shaquille Griffin ready to make a play. Dak Prescott on second and five. in the second quarter is intending a pass for Amari Cooper, and it's intercepted.
Prescott stands strong. It's picked off. Griffin picks it off, coming near side. Makes one man miss, dives out of the way at the 35. The Seahawks have the ball back, and they've got 36 seconds left. A beautiful play. Shaq Griffin has been on Amari Cooper all day long and has been stride for stride, and that time he just undercuts that route, picks it off, and the Seahawks are in business.
Guys, I didn't realize this, but that was Shaquille Griffin's first interception since September of 2018. I didn't even realize he didn't have one last year. I know we kept talking about it and how he wanted to take a step forward. It felt like he had a sophomore slump, so then last year was an improvement for him, but first interception in over a year there.
Yeah, that was a
when
huge
was he a
play.
Pro Bowler?
Last year.
Last year.
With no interceptions?
He was a Pro Bowl alternate.
Oh, who ended up making it to the Pro Bowl because of someone sat out. But, you know, with Shaq, it's one of those things where you love to see those moments, because when you're a DB and you have a reputation for not really getting interceptions, I know that moment felt good from him. And those are the things that's the style of play that you want to see from him. Being aggressive, staying tight to the receiver, and trusting yourself to make the play. Oftentimes, we have seen him really take the conservative route or not seen him pull the trigger fast enough to be able to get his hands on the ball. That couldn't have come at a more important time. It just really felt like at that moment of the game, you know, 16-15, and Dallas has the ball with a chance to go on a two-minute drive. That was huge. And now you can put the ball back in Russell Wilson's hands, this offense in a short field position, and they end up going and scoring a touchdown. I mean, that's huge turn of events there.
Just to add a little context to that, remember, the Seahawks were the ones driving. They got to fourth and four at about, what, the Dallas maybe 45 or something like that.
Yeah.
They tried to draw Dallas offsides, instead took the delay of game, which allowed Dixon to punt and have some room to drop it. And then it was only, what, in like the second or third play that they intercepted Dak.
Yep.
Right, so basically, the net result there is kind of like they converted the fourth and four, because wherever Shaq returned it to was basically where they would have ended up anyway, had they, you know, converted a longer pass there. So it was kind of like they got off track and Shaq got him back on, and they ended up completing that drive. And that was big before the end of the half.
It was, and it was a short drive because of that, Tom. First and one from the Dallas one. Tyler Lockett with his third touchdown of the day.
Russ gets the snap from the shotgun, looks over the top, wide open in the back of the end zone for the third time. Tyler Lockett, touchdown, Seahawks. That time Russ had all day to just stand there and wait for number 16 to come open, and you knew he would. Tyler Lockett crossing the field, wide open in the back of the end zone. His third TD reception. Seattle on top, 22-15.
It's the first three-touchdown game for Tyler Lockett. I believe his fourth or fifth multiple-touchdown game, but a huge day for him. And I think, and look, DK Metcalf's fantastic. He's been great through three games, even with that kind of head-scratching mistake in the first quarter. He has a great ceiling, a bright future with Seattle. But I think Tyler Lockett, if anything in this game, proved I'm still wide receiver one, right? I'm still the guy that can be there, not just as your security blanket, but make the plays. And you get overshadowed, literally and figuratively, by DK Metcalf. But Tyler Lockett is a savvy veteran who knows how to play in this offense, who knows Russell Wilson and proved it on Sunday.
He's an integral part of this offense, no questions asked. And Lockett doesn't play second fiddle to anybody. I really see this as 1A, 1B. And you can put that on any given Sunday between who's going to be that role between Tyler and DK. But with that particular play, they run crossing routes in the back of the end zone with Tyler and DK. And really, Russell is just surveying and seeing, you know, who attracts who. And what ended up happening is they're playing a goal line zone, so they're just passing things off. The Dallas Cowboys are supposed to pass off and stay in their zone. But the corner that was on DK Metcalf traveled with him just like four steps. Not even the entire length of the field, but just four steps, and that was enough to really get Tyler Lockett wide open in the back of the end zone to that corner side. So really, it was a big-time mistake by the Dallas Cowboys, but really nice play design and good execution there to get the touchdown at the end of the half.
and a big first play here for the third quarter from Seattle. Now, Dallas has the ball to start. Don't forget, they deferred to start the game. It's first and 10 from the Dallas 25. Dak Prescott gets sacked by Jaron Reed, fumbles the ball. It's recovered by Benson Mayoa. Seattle gets another shot to score early.
Prescott, first and 10, play fake, is going to throw. Steps up in the pocket, ball gets tipped up in the air. The Seahawks come down with it. It's intercepted down to the 5-yard line. It was grabbed out of the air. Prescott got hit just as he was throwing. The ball was grabbed out of the air by Benson Mayoa down to the 5, and the Seahawks, just like that, are 5 yards away from adding to their score. Dave, the Seahawks defense has given up a couple of big plays today, but they have also come up with some big plays.
That is the crux of the season, what Rabel said at the end right there. They've given up some big plays. They've come up with some big plays. And I saw somebody texted in who said before about the Griffin play. Uh-huh. Well, the interception doesn't make up for everything. I understand it's not necessarily one play offsets another directly. But when you look at the entirety of the game and you're taking away possessions, right, that does make a difference. I mean, one big play like that, when both offenses are marching up and down the field all day long, will make the difference. You steal away a possession or two, yeah. I mean, there's many reasons why they won the game. That's one of them.
Right, and not only stealing the possession or taking a possession away from the opposing offense, but when that translates into points for your team, that's huge. And that's all you can ask from this defense at this point in time right now. You can't ask them to hold the game down for an entire 4 quarters. We can clearly see that everybody can, that this defense is not good enough to do that. But what you do need them to do is come up big in key moments and to be able to take the ball away to where now your offense can translate that into points. And twice that happened. One at the end of the half with Shaquille Griffin's interception, and then at the beginning of the third quarter with this strip sack by Jaron Reed here. That translated into two touchdowns, which really was a huge help and major factor into this game to allow the Seahawks to win.
Speaking of that touchdown, here's the sound of it now.
Play fake to him, Hollister. Yes, he does. He takes the catch in the end zone. Touchdown, Seahawks! Hollister comes out of that fullback spot and just wings right into the end zone, and Russell just lays it up over the top from a yard out. Just an easy pitch and catch. The Seahawks go on top now, 29-15, after the big play by the defense, and the Seahawks take advantage.
Now, this is a very random question for you guys, but I was writing down kind of the stats in my little notebook after the game, looking at where all the touchdowns went. Jacob Hollister has 1 yard total in the game, but also one touchdown. Would scores matter more to you, period? Like, you're like, I don't care if I have 3 yards. If I have 2 touchdowns, I'm good.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think so, too,
guess
right?
What? Touchdowns get you paid.
That's
so
right.
Let's just say that you had 10 touchdowns on the year and you only had 10 yards receiving. Guess what? Someone's going to pay you big money because you're getting in the end zone. Now, with Jacob Hollister, what they've done is a really unique role. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I just wanted to flip it. Let's say you have 1,200 yards,
yeah,
but you only have one touchdown. Which gets you paid? 12 touchdowns, 12 yards, or 1,200 yards and one touchdown?
You'd have to be insanely good with yardage. Like, you'd have to be, like, their go-to guy, and maybe they run it in, or maybe they have a guy that's, you know, they always just toss to in the end zone. But if you're going to not score, you need to be able to carry a big part of their defense. Or, excuse me, their offense. Like, I look at Chris Carson. I know we're getting so off here. I'm going to jump back into a defensive play here. But, no, it's a good question. We're going to get back to this. I like this question. All right. So here's where we get into a sticky part of the game. You got Dak Prescott, who has a 42-yard touchdown pass to Cedric Wilson, who burns Shaq Griffin. The score becomes 30-22 Seattle. Then, to start the fourth quarter, Prescott finds Michael Gallup for a 43-yard touchdown to make it 30-28 Seattle. There's a 2-point conversion attempt here. Then you have this play from Ugo Amadi.
So going for the 2-point conversion, Prescott out of the shotgun, play fake to Elliott, throws to the near side, bouncing off of one player. Does he get to the end zone? No, he doesn't. It was intended for Noah Brown trying to get to the end zone. Now they say he did get to it. No, he did not. He caught the pass, but he did not get to the end zone for the 2-point conversion.
That play was huge. You have Quandre Diggs, who makes the initial hit. He's not able to wrap up, but he bounces Brown back a couple yards. And then you just have a crazy presence of mind by Ugo Amadi there to be able to finish the play. And I love that because Brown wasn't the guy he was responsible for guarding. He sees the ball thrown. He comes off his man and runs to the spot and is able to be there to make that timely play just short of the goal line. Great day for Ugo Amadi. Loved what I saw from him today on Sunday.
I have nothing to say about that play.
All right. Now, let's get to, I think, probably the most pivotal drive of the game. At this point, Seattle is trailing by one. All right. They get the ball with less than 4 minutes remaining. First, you have Chris Carson, who's injured on, I think, what everyone would call a dirty play from Tristan Hill.
Yeah.
Hand off to Carson, back to the left side. Nothing doing there as Tristan Hill fought his way through the blockers. And now going down, it is Chris Carson. Oh, my goodness.
It's not great.
Yeah, I didn't notice that. By the way, that Hill had rolled over him in that moment there. I thought Carson was down. I don't even know if the camera was on him or not. But that is just. Even if Carson wasn't already hurt, what are you doing? He should absolutely be fine. Maybe suspended for a game.
Wilson finds Greg Olsen on 4th-and-3 to convert. Finally, it's time for redemption for DK Metcalf with this 29-yard touchdown reception.
Russell looks, sets, has time. Going to throw to the end zone. Watch. It's DK. He makes the catch. Touchdown, Seahawks. I couldn't see him for a second, and suddenly he flashes in the end zone, and it's DK Metcalf, and he, in fact, makes up for the play earlier. And it's only fitting, isn't it, that he's the guy who comes up with the big reception, the touchdown with 1:47 left to play.
So fitting, so happy for this young man to be able to come back and redeem himself. The crazy thing is A, the offensive line did an amazing job. I thought, although there were pressure on Russell Wilson throughout the day, they actually gave him a great amount of time to be able to work within the pocket. This play was no exception. And this was even the play design. DK just sees that Russell's holding on the ball, goes to where his eyes are, and Russell sees him flash, and Russell just throws it out into the spot and lets DK go run underneath it. Beautiful, beautiful execution. And a little bit of backyard football for you to win the game.
And you have great plays from Shaquem Griffin and Alton Robinson on the final drive. But shouts to Ryan Neal, a cornerback called up from the practice squad 24 hours before the game, who seals the win with this interception in the end zone.
Three receivers right. Prescott is going to look left. He gets hit again. He stumbles. He stays on his feet. Still looks. Throws to the end zone. It's intercepted. The ball is intercepted in the end zone. It's Neal who makes the pick in the end zone. And the Seahawks are going to hold off the Dallas Cowboys. How Dak Prescott was able to stumble away from a sure sack and still throw the ball in the end zone. And Neal, who was just activated today, makes the pick in the end zone, and the Seahawks are going to hold off the Dallas Cowboys. Wow, what a finish. The Seahawks defense steps up when they had to.
When a quarterback is that elusive and escapes with a Houdini act to get out of the tackle there to escape the sack, they almost always end up making a big play there, whether they take it themselves or they make the throw to whoever because now they're not covered anymore. Thank God they were in the red zone there because it was such a tight area for him to have to throw it. It gave Neal a better opportunity for the end zone. And by the way, who? Practice squad? Huh?
Right, exactly. Good for him, too. Don't forget, if you missed the show, you can always listen to our show via the 710 Sports app powered by Dubin Law Group. We're going to get back into this game. All the excitement you saw from Russell Wilson and a few red flags from the defense. That's next in the halftime show.
It's time for the halftime show.
The half is not over. There's 3 seconds on the clock.
Revisiting the biggest stories of today at the midpoint of the show.
The halftime show, it's not easy.
Now, here's Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
It was an amazing game. Another one from the Seattle Seahawks. Russell Wilson throws 5 touchdowns. Seahawks score 38 points, beat the Dallas Cowboys. I really can't stress enough how huge this was to get a win, not just outside of, I think, the toughest division in football, and it's proving to be that way through 3 weeks, but also to beat another NFC contender. Don't forget that in this year's playoffs, there is only one bye week, and it goes to the top seed. You now have, I mean, this is all, you know, pending the rest of your season, but you would now have a tiebreaker over Dallas. That is so, so huge. There's plenty to get into with this, but, you know, the offensive side of the ball, this was phenomenal.
Yeah, it really was. And when you talk about this group, I mean, Russell Wilson making record-breaking performances, leading another comeback drive. I mean, he is the guy that you want to have the ball in his hands in these type of moments. And I think that there's moments where you look at this defense and DK Metcalf's mistake where you just want to tear your hair out and you want to scream at the TV, but they're finding ways to win football games. And this defense, although they've made plenty of mistakes, they've been opportunistic. That's been the theme throughout this season so far. If Russell Wilson, this offense, can continue to keep playing at this record-breaking pace, which, guys, I don't think it's like, hey, we're waiting for the wheels to fall off the train here. I really feel like this is a group that can really keep it going on the offensive side of the ball. It's really just a matter of time if they can clean things up defensively. I think that's the biggest question for me when it comes to the Seattle Seahawks.
Hey, at 2 o'clock, we're going to talk about some things that jumped out to us.
Uh-huh.
And I just want to tease it right now.
Okay.
Our show, this show, has influenced something that is now a national craze. Don't say it if you know it.
Okay.
But we've done it. Okay. C's get degrees. D's get degrees. That's either one of those grades. If you want to hand them over to the defense, that's fine.
Wait, D's don't get degrees?
Yeah, they do.
No way! A D is a failing grade.
Yeah, no.
I know, okay?
Well, at least back in the 90s and early 2000s, it wasn't. but yeah, well, fine. Maybe we'll say D+. We'll compromise.
Okay.
But, like, yeah, a lot of yards given up. And, like Dave Wyman says sometimes, the other guy is sometimes better than you. Like, that Dallas offense and their wide receivers. Like, I don't know what Dallas's record's going to be. They may be 8-8 and win that awful division. But their wide receivers are better than our corners. They just are. Their passing scheme is just better. So if you can make big plays at big time, at the right time, timely plays, which is what they've been doing for years now, but it seems like no matter who the personnel is, they go in and do it. Mayoa, Reed, Shaq in this case made a big play. Even Trey Flowers on the blocked extra point. They all – how about – who was it that stuffed Ezekiel Elliott? Was that Brian Monet?
That was the safety. And then you have Ugo Amadi that stopped him for a two-point conversion, I think.
Oh, yep. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So, right. I remember that, too. Yeah, we're going to talk a little bit about Ugo, too. But, man, they come up with big plays. They allow big yardage. Get used to it.
Man.
If you're going to complain every single week about that, you're going to have a rough season.
I think, though, the question becomes – let's go ahead and get to the next story. Let's focus on the defense for this one. The next question, then – becomes how long they can sustain this with the way the Seahawks defense is playing. The Seahawks defense allowed 522 net yards from the Dallas Cowboys, allowed 6.5 yards per play, allowed almost 8 yards per pass play. They now lead the league in yards allowed by an opponent. It's not
now,
great, you guys. It's not great.
It's not. And, you know, Tom, you're right. I do think that this will be a theme through the rest of the year, but it can't be this bad. It cannot, for them to be able to legitimately win a Super Bowl, it can't be this bad. And you know, here in cut number 6, Bobby Wagner was not, I mean, even with the victory, he was not happy about the way that they played.
Yeah, it's not something I'm accustomed to. It's not something that I'm going to be accustomed to. We'll make the changes. We just need to get off the field. We need to make our plays. I think that's really it. We just need to be a little bit more locked in, be a little bit more sound, and make our plays when they come to us and get off the field. I think, you know, we're hurting ourselves in a lot of facets, and we got to get that out of our ball.
And for Bobby Wagner, I believe him as the defensive captain, they will have some real heart-to-heart conversations. But they've also overcome a lot of adversity. All the injuries, key injuries that they have faced so far in 3 weeks has been pretty significant. They have yet to play an entire, you know, couple of games as a group, as a single group working together. But with that being said, you cannot have big play after big play throughout the game. This defense is predicated off of, hey, if you want to march the ball down the field slowly and inching its way down, we'll take that. All good. But Pete Carroll will never be okay with giving up big plays over the top. And really, over the last 2 weeks, there's just been too many of those moments. And I know that that's something that they're going to really, really harp on this week to make sure that they limit that.
Yeah, I don't know if you guys listened to Bobby Wagner's post-game press conference. Well, first of all, Pete Carroll essentially said, look, I know you guys have to ask me about the defense, but I really don't want to talk about it right now, in a much more polite, tactful way, but basically said that. And then Bobby Wagner seemed just, considering that they are undefeated, sitting atop the NFC West, coming off a great win, he did not seem pleased. I mean, Bobby Wagner visibly bothered, I think, by the performance of this defense so far. And as a leader on that defense, as a defensive captain, you of course would be. All right. Jamal Adams, Chris Carson, Damian Lewis, Jordan Brooks, all of these players suffered injuries in Sunday's win. We'll give you the latest updates on how serious those are next.
This is The Timeline
with Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
Brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
The Timeline on Tom, Jake, and Stacey. We're giving you updates that we're seeing on our own Twitter timelines. If you see any fun stories or news bits you want us to include, go ahead and tag us at Tom Wassel, at JT Heaps 9, at Stacey Ross. We're going to get this started. Well, before I say anything, I have to start by saying I'm opening up the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line 710-710. I need to make sure everyone understands what a Charlie horse is, because we were having a very spirited debate during the break where Tom and I understand that it is a muscle spasm happening. Jake thought it was a contusion, and then DJ thought it's when you hit someone. We are lost as a show. We don't know which way is up. We're confused. So just so that you know, let us know, 710-710, Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. All right. Getting into the timeline, we're going to go ahead and start with the most important bits, the injury updates. These all come from the Pete Carroll Show with Danny and Gallant this morning. I think the one that's on most people's minds is going to be Jamal Adams. He left the game with a groin injury, cut number 7. This is what Carroll had to say.
Yeah, it was really bothering him after the game. He was really bummed out because he wants to play so badly, and you can imagine how important it is to him. But he, too, had a first-degree strain, so we'll see how that goes, and we'll just have to go day by day with that.
Too bad he had a Charlie horse. Got to drink more potassium
right.
to get rid of that. You
know,
that's why you see sometimes guys eating bananas on the bench because they have cramps. No, I'm stupid. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Jake.
You're not stupid, Tom. With Jamal Adams in that situation throughout the game, I don't know if you guys ever had this conversation with anybody that you were watching or texting with, but as the way the defense was playing, a lot of the conversation in my house was, could you imagine what this defense would look like without Jamal Adams? Man, Jamal Adams can't get hurt. Man, at least they have him making plays and you know, rushing the quarterback and things of that nature. And then he goes and gets hurt. So then you do end up finding out what it looks like without Jamal Adams, which I think is everybody's worst nightmare.
Now, the first two games, I definitely thought that, guys, but yesterday, I was having a tough time before he got hurt, determining whether or not... Didn't he get burned himself a couple of times?
Jamal
I didn't
Adams.
Think he had the greatest... Yeah, I didn't think he had the greatest game before he got hurt. Now, again, it's difficult to follow a safety around the broadcast when they're pointing the camera elsewhere. So I don't know where he was in on plays and where he wasn't. And where he affected plays, right? Because sometimes you don't need to be in on where the ball is to affect a play. But
right.
You guys could tell me if you think any different. I didn't think up to that point he necessarily took over like he did, say, in Atlanta, for example.
I would agree with that. I don't know exactly about him getting beat badly. I have to I have to watch the game even further. You know, I like to make a lot of those determinations after I've seen the coach's tape and the All-22. But I do agree, he did not have the same level of impact that he had in the first two games, the obvious impact. But he was still a factor in terms of getting pressures and hurries on Dak and things of that nature. And just having that passion, that leadership on the field and losing that was something that I was really nervous about. But they were able to figure it out, and Ryan Neal came in, and I thought actually played pretty good with all things considered out there on the field, and knowing that Jamal Adams was coaching him up from the sidelines even when they were playing, I think was a really fun story as well.
Yeah, Ryan Neal said that Jamal Adams was continuing to yell at him even when Ryan Neal was in the game. Like, imagine you're in the game and you can actually hear him because there's no fans, and you just hear in the distance, like, Neal! Like, look out this way. Like, you just, the pressure of, like, knowing that you're on TV, you have to fill in, you have to start, and then you've got, you know, one of your defensive leaders, you know, trying to help you out from the sideline. Ugh, I can't imagine. Took advantage of that moment, though, with a
It's like trying to land a plane with,
that's
with
exactly,
a guy
yeah.
air traffic control. Like,
he's
exactly.
like,
pull up!
Starring Joseph Gordon-Levitt somehow, he's telling him, like, okay, I need you to do this. A couple other injury updates. Damian Lewis sounds like that's not going to be very serious. Pete Carroll clarified x-rays were negative. It is not a high ankle sprain. He could potentially play this week. Obviously, we're going to see how that week of practice goes. Said that Jordan Brooks is not believed to be serious. Chris Carson, also not believed to be too serious. He got away without any kind of ligament damage. Cut number 8 right here, though. Carroll not happy about how that went down.
Play. Yeah, I was really pissed about that one. That was—I don't know what's going to happen with that, but I was pissed because that guy hurt him, you know, unfortunately. And he has likewise. He's got a first degree strain, and we'll just have to see how that goes. I keep saying the same thing, but with a running back, it's a little bit more, you know, more of an issue than a big guy.
And what he's referring to is Cowboys defensive tackle Tristan Hill grabbing Chris Carson's leg and then doing an alligator roll. Kind of torquing it. Carson thankfully moved with it. He turned over too, so his leg didn't go in an opposite direction, but that could have been really, really, really bad. I hesitate to call defensive plays dirty plays. I think it's in part hearing Dave Wyman talk about it and how sometimes, like, you can't slow down. Like, I don't know that Quandre Diggs levied a dirty hit on Harry against the Patriots. I think he just didn't stop. You can't play and, you know, hit helmet to helmet. But with this play, I think you can stop this. I think this is a dirty play.
It was after the play, wasn't it?
Exactly.
Yeah.
You can hear the whistle. There's no crowd. You know Chris Carson isn't moving. He's on the ground. I'm like, Russell Wilson is up, walking away, like he's ready to get back to the huddle. This play is done. It's over. And you kept doing this. That's dirty.
Yeah. This wasn't playing and not being able to stop or stop your body. This was a moment where he had the intent to hurt and to injure Chris Carson. Tristan Hill, this is a very dirty play, and it's bush league. It's a play that can't be part of this game, and I am very curious to see what the NFL is going to do about it, because if they laid down a suspension, although it would be harsh because Tristan Hill is a young player and hasn't had like a history like Vontaze Burfict has had in terms of, you know, levying dirty hits on players, I would agree with it. I would stand by it because the intent was absolutely there.
What did you guys think of the running game up until that play, though? The running game on both sides, by the way, and with two guys who are great running backs in Carson and Elliott, really failed to get going. I mean, Elliott had a couple of maybe nice runs in the beginning, but they contained him for the most part. And I thought Dallas contained Carson and Hyde when they put him out there as well. What did you guys think?
I think it feels that way because they didn't really, you know, go for it totally, but Chris Carson still averaged 4.6 yards per carry. They basically, it was both teams throwing on each other, both attacked each other's secondaries, but the run game Seattle had when they turned to it was basically two times as effective as Dallas. Ezekiel Elliott and Chris Carson had the exact same number of attempts, 14. Elliott rushed for 34 yards, Carson for 64 yards.
Yeah, I would say very much on the Dallas end that they were able to contain Ezekiel Elliott in that running game pretty well. And I was very impressed by that throughout the game. And Dallas just said, hey, heck with that. We're just going to go right at this secondary and move the ball. And for Seattle, they used the running game more as a timely changeup. And it worked out for them. And I thought Chris Carson and Travis Homer and Carlos Hyde actually played pretty well. And at times, I know that there's some people in the second half in particular in some of these short yarded situations that were hoping that they would run the ball instead of pass the ball. And I think that there's an argument to be made there. But overall, I don't think the Cowboys stifled the Seahawks run game. I just think that the Seahawks really leaned into the pass. And you can see why. As of right now, guys, every seven Russell Wilson pass attempts leads to a touchdown. Think about that. That's insane right now in terms of the way that he is playing and the way that this offense is playing. And so uncharacteristically, they are definitely passing the football more and in certain situations than they ever have before.
I just opened up the text here for a second. Lots of reaction on the Charlie horse thing. And as expected, lots of variation on opinions.
We didn't get an answer at all.
Well, most people acknowledging that it's a muscle cramp. Now, I'm not sure if it varies per person, but in my experience, it's when you're sitting there and all of a sudden you feel a tightening in what feels like a muscle or a tendon in your foot. And like your toe goes right one way and the rest of your big toe goes one way and the rest of your toes go another. And you have to, the only way to get rid of it is to quickly just stand up, put pressure on it, and then it just goes away.
I don't think I've ever had that.
Right, you know. But that's what I would call a cramp. I would just say, hey, I just had a cramp, not a Charlie horse. A Charlie horse to me, at least the way that I've defined it over my lifetime, has been the after effect of your muscle. So either you get hit really hard and there's a really deep contusion and right there in your leg or on your arm or anything like that. It, to me, it's been referred to as a Charlie horse. Or after that muscle cramp, that muscle is still, there's still a lot of fatigue there. That's what I have been used to calling a Charlie horse. And it's good to know that I'm not the only one that thinks that.
Related to this play, by the way, KJ Wright, I don't have time to get into this since we're wrapping up here, but KJ Wright tweeting at the NFL about the Tristan Hill play, that being retweeted by Quandre Diggs. Fellow Seahawks clearly not happy with this. All right. Coming up next on Tom, Jake, and Stacey, we're going to talk about the things that caught our eye, whether it was a trend, whether it was something a specific player did. We're going to take another look at this game in a very minute detail. That's next.